do the roll call. I'll just pass this around the table. Amanda Nedleski, present.
Zach Stock here.
Tim Stocker here. Todd Kubicki.
Jeff Gens.
Monica Juhas.
Ethan Gubbins.
Oh, Erica Vanda.
Eric Lemire.
Great. Dave Gertson is excused for today. Next is citizens' comments. Are there any citizens' comments? Any citizens' comments? Citizens' comments. Seeing none, citizens' comments are closed. Next on the agenda are chairman's comments. I have one comment today. I was contacted by the county executive's office that she will be making a proclamation that September is Suicide Prevention Month. And I or somebody from this committee will read that proclamation at the September 20th county board meeting. That's all I have. Are there any comments from committee members? Any comments from other supervisors in attendance? Any comments from youth and governance? Okay, comments are closed. I need a motion to approve the minutes from the August 2nd meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Next on the agenda, we have a resolution to accept the Nursing Home and Long-Term Care Facility Infection Prevention and Infrastructure Matching Funds Grant. Do we have some commentary on that? Good evening, everybody. So this is just a matching grant that I had applied for in April through the Department of Human Services. It was open to all nursing homes in the state of Wisconsin. It is a matching grant, so inevitably it's for staff incentives for them picking up shifts or anything we need in relation to the staffing aspects. So it's for $13,600. We are pretty much already doing this, so it kind of works out that we did receive these funds if approved for you to receive them as well. So yeah, that's about it. I have the grant application that was submitted if you have any questions.
Any questions from the committee?
Is it 50-50 match?
Yes.
Supervisor Gens actually raised his hand first.
I ask this about every grant. Is this going to go directly to salaries, or is this just a stopgap thing to have extra shifts? I mean, are we going to pay somebody with this? Because what happens when the grant runs out?
Then, well, it's to pick up the extra shifts. So, for example, we already have issues in relation to the staffing and filling shifts. So anybody who is willing to pick up a non-scheduled shift,
right,
then we
but
would...
it's people you already have. You're not going to go out and hire or put this towards anything. This is
no,
also,
this is
also
specific
I thought it was
for that.
Yeah, I thought it was like incentives for hiring as well. Did I see that in there?
Not that I recall.
Okay.
We already have that with the new CNA RA incentive that was passed a few months ago.
How is the staffing? I mean, have the last time we spoke, and you know, you were looking to get more staff and, you know, iron some things.
I am definitely optimistic. So we're still down.
Well, you're always optimistic, right? Let's talk reality.
33 CNAs currently and about 11 RAs. We just lost 11 CNAs back to school. So it was a hard thing to my heart on the first when they all left and went back to school. God bless them. They'll come back for holidays. We did have the WIS caregiver program that finally got up and running, so we are starting to see movement with that. It takes time, unfortunately, but they inevitably pick us, we call them, and then we try to set up an interview. They will pretty much be like a resident assistant, not an actual CNA, so they can't do some things. As they're going through schooling to get a CNA certification, and this is all a project through the state. And then they get a retention bonus after 6 months. So we are starting to see the people who are contacting us in being interested to go through this program with Brookside.
Being down that number of people, what is your overtime budget? I mean, how does it look with overtime?
So it's not good, but the problem is we've had to reduce our admissions. That is where the biggest concern lies, is we can't take on more than we can actually care for. So we do have our second floor closed and one of our long-term care halls. So the overtime is not, it is over the projected budget for, I think the last MFA was, or MFR was for July, it was maybe at 75% for RC.
And you said you're optimistic. Do you see this turning around at all? I mean, for us to have these facilities and have them open and not be able to staff them is very disconcerting.
That it is. It is.
And I'm not saying it's you or what you guys are doing. It's a
nationwide issue.
Just,
but
yes.
As per the grant, I mean, specific to this particular grant, we could talk about your staffing. It's your story. Stuff
all day, every day.
as per this particular grant, the way I understood it is it's convenient that you applied for it in April, given the fact that just recently the county executive agreed to the incentive program for raising the base pay for existing members for retention. So am I correct in saying that this is a little chunk that will help fund that?
Absolutely.
And what happens when it runs out?
It
just goes away.
It goes away.
Is there any
opportunity
to renew that at any point?
No, not at this time.
It's just kind of a one-time thing.
It is a one-time thing.
So it's really just to put that in this pocket over here kind of thing. We're already doing that.
That's exactly it.
It's not tied to any particular individual or
No, not at all.
Were there any other questions relative to the specific to the grant? Supervisor Stock, you had a question. It was a match grant.
It got answered.
Okay.
I'm just curious how long you project these funds lasting once they're awarded.
I don't really have. I'm going to say through the end of the year, at least. So because the staffing itself changes in relation to our census, it's hard to project, but I can give you that I do anticipate that it will probably go through the end of the year.
Is this something we're going to be able to apply for again, or is this just a one-off thing?
Unfortunately, this is a one-time thing. Yes.
That's all.
Any other questions specific to this grant and this resolution? Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Resolution carries. I will pass it around. Next on the agenda, resolution for Brookside Care Center to receive settlement funds.
So this is a little bit interesting. So this is for $208.03. Apparently there was a class action suit in 2017 in relation to faxes being sent to multiple healthcare entities from Rehab Care, which is a therapy company. There was a lawsuit that occurred. It was filed under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. I'm assuming my predecessor must have applied for these funds prior to my arrival, stating how many faxes we received, because they were, the dollars were based on how many faxes were submitted. So I don't know a lot of the history of it, other than the fact that we received $208.03 and a check from this. So,
can you imagine if we all got money for all the spam we received?
Oh yeah,
we receive a lot less, I bet.
Well, if you actually look at this particular lawsuit, there's a lot of litigation, and for many years that went on. So if somebody has a lot of time and patience to sue in relation to the spam, they could.
This isn't anything that we like, this was just something where you just signed on to this existing, we didn't have to spend any money.
Correct, yes, so correct.
Whoever was filing the class action lawsuit contact
the postcards you get in the mail.
Plaintiffs said that you want to be a part of it. You submit how many faxes you received from the respondent.
That was it.
If they win.
Uh-huh.
Any other details I'm missing?
No, it will go into the Sunshine Fund, which is our fund that we utilize for residents, such as bingo dollar prizes and stuff like that. So it is going to go back into for the residents.
Any other discussion or questions on receiving this check? Do we have a motion?
A motion approved.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next on the agenda, thank you, Linda.
Sure thing.
Next on the agenda, discussion on opioid settlement funds. Are we tag teaming it, or should
we? We are. Well, I'll speak to finances and he'll speak to operations.
Okay, great. Thanks for coming, Kay.
You're welcome. As you know, Kenosha County will be receiving opioid funds from the settlements. At this point, there are two parts to the settlement monies that we are aware of. One is from the manufacturer, which is Johnson & Johnson. Those funds will come over 15 years. And then the second component is from distributors, Amerisource, McKesson, and Cardinal. Those payments are scheduled to be over 18 years. As you know from the resolutions that came forward earlier this year, the gross settlement that Kenosha County is expected to receive is $10 million overall. However, right off the top, 20% will go for legal fees, and that's about $2.1 million. So the net settlement to Kenosha County is $8.3 million. The distributors' payments, we've received our first installment. That was $289,694, and we received that about 2 weeks ago on August 22nd. There's expected to be a payment from Johnson & Johnson. The first installment is $103,000, but as of this point in time, we have not heard when we should receive that. It is supposed to be received in 22, but we do not know when. Based on how little information we received before, hey, we're ready to send you a check, I may find out a week before we receive the funds. Or maybe not even that, because we are now registered with the site and the organization that's handling it. The county is considering securitization of the distributor payments. And what that means is we are considering the possibility of taking those funds up front. It would be a lower amount than the payments. The reason for the consideration of doing that is because the distributors are not as stable of the businesses as the manufacturers. So Johnson & Johnson is a AAA rated corporation. There's very little fear that they will go bankrupt and we will not see our 13 years worth of payments. The other distributors, however, are BBB rated corporations, and there is a decided concern that they could, that one or all could go out of business. There's no protections that we rank higher than anyone else in a bankruptcy. And so there's a little bit of concern throughout the state, potentially throughout the nation, that the distributors might not be in business in 18 years for us to see that steady stream of payments. We have done some preliminary calculations on securitization. We have indicated to Wisconsin Counties Association that we might have an interest, and we are currently waiting for more information to come back to give us the financial implications so that we can better evaluate. And if we choose to not go forward, you won't see or anything more from us. We'll get our 18 years of payments, or we'll let you know if that's not happening. However, if we decide that that is a recommendation we want to bring forward, we would come forward with a resolution to that effect to get the board's approval to move forward with that.
Did you say you had no idea really exactly how much the securitization would be if we were to go that route?
We have some preliminary calculations, but at this point we're still waiting for some more final information. Some of the costs involved, we will see, are like fixed costs. So they're spread across all those who want to participate, and this is a statewide thing. So WCA, Wisconsin Counties Association, was looking for counties that were interested. So now they can say, oh, okay, these counties are interested. These are the dollars we're dealing with. We spread these costs across. This is really what the counties are looking at and come back to us with that information. The information that they gave us originally was based on everyone doing the securitization, which obviously some are not interested in.
as may barrage you with those questions. Any questions for Patty before she steps away? About the amounts or how they may or may not be received over a period of time?
So, you said you have had some preliminary work up on the numbers. Even without all of the information, they may change a little. What do you have now? What are you thinking?
I don't have those with me. The way that the securitization would be structured is a lump sum up front of a portion.
Right.
And I think that would be, if I remember right, about $2.9 million. And then there's a very residual amount that still would be paid out over 18 years, and that amount is minimal. I don't even remember exactly what the component is for the distributors versus Jeff.
So possibly $3.9 million.
Correct.
Or
our only reason for doing this, there's been a lot of discussion of there's a steady stream of payments. We wouldn't be looking at a $3 million program that would start next year that we need the funds. It's not a matter of needing the funds up front. It's a matter
I think you should take the money.
There's twofold to it. The first is if there was something that we wanted to do that might take more funding than the normal payment amount to put something in place that would then taper off. And the second, obviously, being the risk of the distributors not following through.
Yeah, guaranteed money versus possible money. I always take the guaranteed money. So that would be fine.
It's kind of like, the analysis is winning the lottery. You take a lump sum up front, you take payments up front.
And you explained that if they decide to recommend going with the securitized amount, that it would come forward as a resolution.
Yeah.
So getting back to me having the floor and me asking the questions, how much of the 8.3 is that? Is the second half other than the Johnson & Johnson?
I don't have that with me either. I'm sorry. I really was only one expected to report on what we've recently.
Can you email that to me?
I only have draft information. I can give you the breakdown between the two, but it's calculated in net present value, so it's really based on a $6.9 million amount. So without an explanation, I
really... Maybe you should call me. Thank you.
They finished with run against.
So,
two arms against.
I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
Supervisor Ricky.
Yes. So out of the 10.4 million that you mentioned earlier, the lawyers get their money, which is fine. I get that. Then we're at 8.3, and then best guess is we'd be at less than half of that, 3.9, if we took.
Only the distributor portion. I believe it ends up being about 83% that we would be getting.
All right. And the other thing, you're going to have dialogue with the supervisor against them. And then we'll come back to the report to us. The next meeting about it, or when you get something. How about when you get some information? Yes. We ask for that, Chairman, when the information is forthwith.
She can only move as fast, I think.
I understand that. Very good. Because I just want
to
get a good understanding of this.
Whether it's a recommendation to do the securitization and the resolution comes forward, or a decision to not, that conversation.
Perfect. Thank you for that, and I appreciate what Supervisor Gunn says. Take for sure of that versus wishful thinking, because they could get, you get a couple $100,000 and see you later, everything's gone. Or we can get nearly $4 million plus a little more, depending on how things shake out. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank
you. Any other discussion? Any other questions for Penn?
We have one question. How does this fit into like budgeting season? Because like if we don't have the actual numbers by budget, like how is that?
We put a placeholder in our budget for the money, and just so that it's in there, and you'll see that when we show up in October. And it's a small amount, but we just have it a dollar amount in there, so then when the money filters through, we have a separate account that it has to go into to be tracked. So that you'll be approving that process hopefully in October.
Thank you.
I would just say that the budget is the funds to be expended for the programs that John's going to talk about. and at this point, those have not been finalized.
She just threw my presentation.
to make the picture more clear.
So Supervisor Gensa at the last meeting had asked that what exactly can this money be spent on. So I submitted in the packet Exhibit E, which is the 9 core strategies that you're allowed to spend these funds on. There is no time frame on these dollars, meaning that if we get them, we have to spend them in that following year. This could be a program that's laid out long term. What you'll see in here is quite a bit of leniency on what we can spend it on regarding MAT, medically assisted treatment, services for pregnant and postpartum mothers, prevention programming, treatment for incarcerated persons. So it's pretty broad range. We've only begun to have some very preliminary discussions. What we did receive extra funds on that are now gone were to help folks in recovery homes. So looking at that as a possible place that we come back and certainly get this committee's approval on. And also looking at some prevention programs in schools, which has been lacking. So those are the kind of two areas we're thinking of right now. We recognize that anything we would put forward, we were in front of you guys to say, here's how we want to spend X amount of dollars providing these type of services. So you'll be in that process as we continue to move on. But I just wanted to give you kind of the framework of what it is we can spend those on.
Are there any questions for Mr. Jansen on how the money can be used?
Just a question, I guess, in general. You know, they have all these programs, and whatever 2 or 3 out of that 9 is sort of zero in on. Are there any other communities similar to ours where they've already done this without grant money, but with tax money, and to get any kind of measurable results? Guiding programs are good, but I don't often think they're measured on how successful they are in the end. Like you have a program that's ending now. I don't know anything about it, but I don't know sort of what the objectives were at the beginning other than to spend the money that they were met.
So we track all of our programs have outcomes, and we track those. And if they're not meeting those outcomes and we need to dump the program, we certainly will, or meet to figure out what's not working well in those programs. There are other medically assisted treatment programs in the state. We were one of the early ones to go that route, starting in 2016, I believe, and have been tracking those outcomes since day one. We're gonna go, any program that we're gonna come back to this committee on to say, this is where we'd like to spend them, it's gonna be evidence-based, and we're gonna be tracking the effectiveness of that. So this isn't just us sitting in a room trying to dream up different ways to do things. There's a lot of programs out there. WCA, the Wisconsin Counties Association, I think has a dedicated spot on their webpage now, which will take you to best practices. NACO, which is the National County Organization, also has a lot of information out there that counties are sharing now and communities are sharing. So yeah, relying on some of their expertise, what they've learned, what didn't work, what did work, and then figuring out what works best for our community also is part of our job. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Any other questions from supervisors, attendants, committee members?
Thank you.
Thank you so much for both of your time preparing as well as attending and presenting. I appreciate it. Next on the agenda is the presentation for the Division of Workforce Development, Lana Taylor and Company.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to share information about what the programs are in the Division of Workforce Development. I'd like to introduce some of our team leaders over here. In the back, we have Kim Peters. She's our Economic Support Program Manager.
You can stand up.
She's worked for the county for
24
years.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is Lori Thomas. She's our Lead Attorney for Child Support Services. 22 years? No, 18.
Oh, boy, I started and I've been lead since.
Thank you. And Catherine Lambrex, she's our attorney in child support services. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for being here.
I like people to see the faces of the employees and what they do. So the first slide is about economic support. So I don't need my reading glasses. So we have three main programs in the division. We have economic support, we have child support services, and we have workforce investment and opportunity active programs. So we're going to start with Kenosha County Economic Support, and when I finish with them, please ask any questions before I move on to the next program. So economic support is an income maintenance agency, and we have them throughout the state of Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, they are in consortiums. And what we do is we hire eligibility support specialists, economic support specialists. That's what their job title is. They will determine whether or not you're eligible for Medicaid, Badger Care Plus, food share employment and training, child care. So they go through extensive training so that they're able to determine if you're eligible, because we have to be accurate with our eligibility, because if we aren't, then we get dinged. And we're lumped in with the entire state of Wisconsin, so you don't want to be the consortium that's not being accurate and pulling the rest of the state down with you. So we take that very seriously. So our consortium is called WKRP. You may hear that from your citizens that you talk to. They call into a call center in order to get their benefits. They can also walk in, they can apply online, they can apply through a mobile app. We have a large caseload between the two counties. We have 58,000 cases. It's gone up 4.6% since 2021. It was higher than that right after the pandemic started. A lot of people weren't working. They needed assistance. And now we're going down, but we're still higher than we were in 2019. So in Kenosha, we have 42 employees, and in Racine, there are 53 employees. And I wanted to point that out because since we're in a consortium, if one county is down a lot of employees, it affects us as a whole. And not to pick on Racine or anything, but they're down 9 employees right now. They have 9 openings, and they have, I think it's 4 people that are in training right now. And when they're in training, they can't do the work that we need to have done, so they don't really count, because they're not processing applications, talking to people on the phone. And right now, Kenosha, we have 3 people in training, but we don't have a vacancy at present. We do find that when people are in economic support for a while, since it's largely call center work, they get burned out. They're on the phone 60 to 75% of the day. So some of them may move on to another opportunity, or they might want to apply for something in the child support area, because they don't have to be in a call center all day long. We do have a lot of foot traffic. As you can see in Kenosha and Bristol, we have 943 office visits in 1 month. And I wanted to point out also, we have this universal caseload. So it's not assigned to one economic support specialist. You're on the phone, you get a call. This could be a Racine case that you answer the call for, but you have to process that case, answer the questions, treat everybody the same. So we're monitored by the Department of Health Services, and we have contract obligations with them, such as our average speed of the answer has to be 10 minutes or less, or we could be put under a corrective action with the state. Historically, we've done a great job at being under 10 minutes. We've been struggling in this last month, and I believe it's because we are down so many employees, particularly in Racine. Well, and starting...
Sorry, I asked a question.
Do you want to take questions as you go?
Or
that's fine.
Then I got you on the same page, so I can
relate to it.
No, you said that Racine's at 53, and you said they needed 9. So at 62, they're fully staffed, or at 53, they're fully staffed?
53, they're fully staffed.
And they're down 9 from that, so they're actually going to need. Okay, then we're fully staffed, but we have 3 in training, correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yep,
thank you.
Sure. Please feel free to ask a question at any time, it's fine.
That's the only reason I want to do it. I'm going to get you right on the page, so I apologize.
No.
I'm slowing your roll down there.
So to give you an idea of the local monitoring in real time, I think that's important, because with the call center work, we can watch what everybody's doing live. We can see if they're on the call, we can see who they're talking to, we can listen to the call, we can record the call, and the state records some of the calls anyways and sends them to us. So we are monitoring them in real time.
The state is monitoring them in real time. So we have to do our own internal reports, and then the state is providing us with reports. So it's kind of nice to have that checks and balance to make sure the supervisor isn't thinking that they're catching something that isn't really happening, or they're not catching something that is happening. So we have 14,000 calls in July, 38% increase from 2021. And we're the second busiest consortium in the state, but that's not including the walk. They're their own entity. I suspect that that large increase is not only due to caseload, but we think that people are calling and they have to wait, and then they hang up, and then they call back. So it counts as two calls, three calls. So what we'd like them to do with this call center platform is to put something in place where it says, you have a wait time of 15 minutes, and then you can decide whether or not you want to wait, or a callback feature. That would be nice. So we can call them back. So we're pushing for that. But we do have a new call center platform that we're not entirely crazy about. It's called Genesis. We used to have one that we were used to. We've been using for 10 years. And now we have something new. And the consortiums are not entirely pleased with it. And we have 78 unduplicated requests for changes to that system. That's how many. Yeah.
How did that come about?
Pardon?
How did that come about, the new system? Was it something that was requested? Was it a necessary technical upgrade? Did you have input into the features you wanted? And, you know, I assume this is state-funded.
Yes. Yeah. So, they started the process at least 5 years ago, and then it would be put on the back burner. There were contract problems with the vendor. So it just kept dragging on and on and on. And I actually thought it was going to go away. And they have always asked for our input. We have like 3 state meetings a month plus 2 like particular committee meetings in regard to the call center platform. But the state had decided that this was a go. It must have been maybe, well, I'm not sure why they decided it was a go, so I won't conjecture.
Okay, but we don't have to stay on that too long, just curious.
Sure. How quickly we process applications, we have a 95% benchmark. And these are like 6-month reporting forms, renewals, the original application. We have to be 95% or above, again, or there's corrective action potentially. And we're usually about at 98-99%, so that's good.
What is corrective action?
That means the state comes and says, why are you having this issue? What's going on here? We try to explain it, and they're probably going to want something in writing and put us on a formal plan for a year to make sure we get out of the hole that we're in. God forbid. All right. Yes, the training for the economic support specialists really kills us when we lose an employee in this realm, because 12 weeks in the classroom and then 6 to 10 weeks on the floor being mentored and having leads support them. And then they can't confirm a case until we know they're going to be accurate. So when we train somebody that long, and let's say they leave two months later, that really hurts us. So we work really hard in Kenosha to engage and retain the employees. We use all of the economic support supervisors, and the manager was through the Living as a Leader coursework, and that has helped us learn a lot about how to engage and retain employees. So we use that culture, we use what we learned in there to try to keep employees and try to get their feedback. Like, we have employee engagement groups. We'll do like an annual round robin where we go and talk to everybody to get their feedback. Some of the things that are requested are not possible, but then at least we know what they're thinking and we can tell them why we maybe cannot implement that. I wanted you to know how many people in Kenosha County are eligible for food share. That's 13%. And I can't even tell you the entire process, you know, step by step, how to determine eligibility, but I did list on there the federal poverty level for you. But they have to meet with someone and go through assets, find out where they are with net income, housing, many things that they have to go through, and things that have to be provided as proof. If we find out later through computer systems that talk to our system that we weren't given correct information,
then it goes to our program integrity unit, and we will look for to be recompensated for benefits that went out that shouldn't have. We also provide child care subsidies through Wisconsin Shares. That's a Department of Children and Families program. And so that kind of, this is why this all ties into the title, Workforce Development. We're trying to give people the tools that they can use so that they can work. So with child care subsidies, if you're earning up to 185% of the federal poverty level, you'd be eligible. So then they pay for part of their child care. They get an EBT card, and they can put it in at their provider, and it takes the money off the card. So the money doesn't go to that person. It's put on a card and can only be used at that provider that they're authorized to use it with. So before the pandemic, we had 121 child care providers in Kenosha County, and now we have 115. So no, we're not down too much, but I can tell you that the providers are not taking as many children as they used to. We're down about 300 children, so that because they're trying to create space, room. They get additional funding from the Department of Children and Families to keep their doors open. That's going to go away eventually. So that's a concern of mine. I want to make sure that we have quality child care, because if I don't have that in this community, I'm not going to be able to get people employed. And then 27% of the people in our county are eligible and receive Medicaid. And that includes elderly, blind, and disabled, and people in long-term care. All right, so that ends the economic support information. Any questions about economic support?
A couple of questions. What's the age of a child when they're no longer under that program or that subsidized, like
for 12, child care.
11, 13?
I think it's 12.
It's 12?
Mm-hmm.
So the overall trend is that the number of kids in our county are going down with birth rates, but in the last 3 years, the numbers pretty much stayed the same. I mean, it's gone down, like you said, 300. Is that based on the population? Have you seen this decline over the last 10 years? The number, I don't even know how long this program has been.
No, actually, it always was pretty steady for the 7 years I was in this position tracking it. But now it's, this is the first time, and it was about 2 years ago, where I saw it start to go down.
Because this, in the county, at least in Kenosha Unified, the number of kids are now almost 25% 12 years ago.
Okay.
So I don't know if that number,
yeah.
I'm just curious if that's a trend that's seen, that this is the first year it's been that kind of a drop.
That's a good thing to point out, though, because I would like to look into that, how that relates to the children that are in school.
So yeah. Does this program, does it also get things after school with the Y and
yes.
The Boys and Girls Club? Are those two of the bigger providers numbers-wise?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I think that some parents, they're having their kids at home, like if they're, let's say they are working at home and they have an 11-year-old who they wouldn't want to be at home maybe by themselves. But if they're working from home and they can hear the child in the other room doing something, then they feel better about the child being
sure.
home. Could be that.
Yeah.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah. So is the amount for 2023 going to be the same as 2022, or do they base this on a sliding scale? But you know, like you get so much per child based upon. The reason I'm asking is because I'm sure they're having to pay the people that work at these child care places more, so mm-hmm. it might end up being the same amount even though there's 300 less kids.
True.
I mean, is that really seeing that?
Everything has been pretty much. Status quo for all the consortiums providing the child care, the way the funding is spread out. I haven't seen any market increases or decreases. They balance it out. But
reason
I'm wondering what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah. The reason I ask is because this type of job that these caretakers, sort of similar to what we have at Brookside and Mobile Brook, it was entry-level jobs, right? And they can't hardly fund those. I'm just curious, they're not our employees, but somehow or other, the funding is going to be interesting at some point with the number of kids going down and having people work with the kids. That's all funded through the state, right? So
yes.
Yeah. So it's not as much of a concern, but just an interesting scenario that's going to happen.
It is an issue about the pay for the child care providers. They can find work doing something else that's not as, you know, has so much responsibility as taking care of a child.
You'll have more of those centers closing down.
Yeah, it could happen that more do when those additional benefits leave the state.
Most of our child care provider positions don't offer like insurance or extended benefits. So they will go somewhere else, and then you will have businesses that close their doors because they can't get employees. Any other questions? Anything related to what Supervisor Thomas was saying? I had a different question. So you, Nida, you mentioned about eligibility and determining accurately if someone is eligible, and then if through whatever systems speak to each other, it's determined programmatically that maybe someone didn't disclose all of their assets or income or whatever. You said something about being recompensated for benefits that had been distributed. How does that work?
They had the opportunity for a fair hearing. Most of the time, people do not show up for the fair hearing, and then the same decision is rendered because we've already made a decision that, hey, you owe us this money because of this time period. We found out you actually were working here making X amount of dollars, and you would not be eligible. And they're supposed to report that within 10 days. Of a change in employment. So
how often do you actually get recompensated?
Well, they do tax intercepts.
Okay.
Or you're not eligible for the benefits. Or they'll take it off a benefit if you're in some other benefit. Maybe they'll enter into an agreement with you and take a little bit off that benefit each month to make sure that they're getting the money back, in a sense. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe sometime I'll come and learn more about it.
Yeah, okay.
Any other questions related to economics or to Redstock?
Yeah, the training, I'm assuming that's state mandated training. Is there any flexibility on your end as far as how you administer that, or?
Yes, we've actually been pretty proactive in our consortium. We do a lot of on-the-floor training that is not required of us, and we do shadowing. That's one thing we learned when they're supposed to be doing this classroom every day, so be in the classroom. We have figured out a way to fit in time where they're supposed to be reading and studying, where they have to shadow. Because we learned that if they're not watching how the job is in real time, once they go to the floor, they might be shocked and say, this isn't for me. I'm out of here. So we do have time built in that we can fit different things in. And we are pretty assertive on that because we can't wait.
It kind of reminded me of, for my line of work, they use Digger's Hotline, and they have their own, or we can file our own. Instead of going through the person on the phone, we can file it all online. But there's like a period where we have to file with X, like 30-some records perfectly before they'll let us do it on our own. So I wasn't sure if you guys had something like that where you can allow people to just kind of do it on their own, have somebody review it, just as a way. It was just something that I've done that seems to work pretty well that does that. The other question I had, pertaining to what you just said, as far as what flexibility is there when you have somebody that's enrolled in food share, and then they do, you know, land a part-time job, or they do start earning some additional income, is there any type of a grace period that would allow them to not get penalized immediately, or is all that stuff kind of mandated by the state? Because I know some of the issues that people have run into is when, you know, they're getting the food benefits, then they do land that part-time job, or they get they get their foot in the door somewhere, but then they immediately lose their food share benefits, and it's just like, oh, why am I even working? Because I'm, you know, it's just like it's immediate takeaway from the money that they're now making from this job that they're trying to get their foot in the door. And is there any type of flexibility there? How do you guys determine what those metrics are?
Yeah, there really isn't any flexibility. They have to let us know when they get in the job that, you know, they're earning more money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if there's any change, we have to know. And it is difficult for people when, you know, they just go a little bit over the eligibility limit and then they lose their child care and then they're like, wait, how am I going to work? So a lot of thought needs to go into changing that and some kind of a step down thing. I think that's a good idea.
And that's a state level.
Yeah.
Good job. Thank you.
Any other questions on economic support? Okay, moving on.
All right, child support services. I know Shalonda came, Ms. Shalonda Black, Commercial County Child Support Supervisor. She came and gave a presentation, but I wanted to just kind of hone in on our performance rates for child support. We receive funding based upon paternity establishment, court order establishment, and collections for current support and arrears. And we have to meet certain numbers in order to get 100% of the funding. And in Kenosha County, I listed our rates there. For paternity establishment, we're at 100.69%, so we're above the rate. So that is 90%, court orders 80%, and we're at 87%. But with current support and arrears, we're at 71 and 70, and the rate is 80%. So the history of child support, over 20 years ago, our current support rate was somewhere between 40 and 50%. And then we had a manager come in, Mr. Beeney, and he was able to get us up to between 65 and 70%, which was fantastic work over that time period. And we've been hovering between 70 and 72% in the last few years. Of the six extra large counties in the state of Wisconsin, we're all not able to meet that 80% threshold for current support and arrears. We suspect it's because of the large counties that have a mix of urban and rural. We're also in a corridor that goes from Chicago to Milwaukee, and we have a population that moves back and forth. In that realm, it's hard for us to locate parents when they move to different counties or they move to another state. So it's a goal of ours to reach 80%. We work really hard at it. We have monthly performance meetings. We track each child support specialist performance in those two areas. It's a big challenge for us, but at least we know the other counties that are our size have the same challenge. So that makes us think that it has something to do with the demographics. So our funding has been pretty much the same because, like I said, we've been at that rate for a while. Just get a little bit of a reduced amount from what we would get at 80% through some complex magical formula that the state has that I can't even understand. But if we were to dip under the 70, if we were to go down to 65%, that might hurt us. I'm not sure how much that would be. So I want to make sure that we stay at where we're at or even better and improve. They do have high caseloads, the specialists do. They have about 1,000 cases apiece that they have to enforce. But only about 25% of that caseload takes a lot of effort. Not to say that they're not doing work on the other 75% of the case. It's just not as challenging, like they're not trying to locate somebody. Child support comes out of the Social Security Act, Title 4D of the Social Security Act. And so we have to enforce those cases. These are people who have applied for services or received a referral because they're receiving public assistance. But we also have this financial management piece for these non-4D cases. So I just wanted you to be aware we do have employees that are doing this financial management, and we don't really get compensation for doing that from the state and federal government because it's not under the 4D program. We have to take the court orders, we have to enter in the system, we have to send in withholdings. So I'm a proponent for trying to get people to apply for our services. We have a one-page app that's on our website, and if they apply, it's free, and then they become a 4D case, and then we get compensated for having that case. I'm hoping that the entire state would move to that model where you're automatically a 4D case, and then you could opt out. I would like to see that because I don't understand why we're doing work on a case and we're not getting compensated for it. So there's 39 team members in child support, and we provide employment and parenting services, which is unique, and you heard about that from Ms. Black. Every year we collect $34 to $36 million in Kenosha County, and statewide it's $906 million. It is a very cost-effective program, collecting $6.43 for every dollar spent. Okay, any questions about child support?
With these numbers up here in your first area there, is there cooperation with other counties and states when somebody moves from here to another county? Is there not always.
Depends on the state.
I'm sorry.
No, but
we generally will get, I mean, we can get some cooperation. We do have a U.S. program where we can reach out to other states. We have a network of workers that will work with in specific states. That was a program that was piloted by Darlene Sandberg, who used to work for Kenosha County. She piloted a program where we could have direct connection with workers in other states. So if we had a question, we need to reach out. Some states are better than others.
Is there some system that these people are logged into where they go somewhere else, their name still pops up, and so it's easier to track them, or? No.
There's no federal database, no. We do have a program that the other state child care agencies communicate with us, but no. We use locate services, and
that's
just hard. Sometimes a lot of grit and hard work.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no federal system,
no.
Just locate systems that we can.
Any other questions from supervisors, committee members about child support services? Supervisor Gaines?
The 70 and 71% numbers, I understand that you're treading water there and we're not really losing, but it's been fairly consistent. What are your challenges with those two numbers?
I think it's people moving from job to job. So they're going to job for a while, we'll find out and send income withholding, and then as soon as that is in place, they'll leave that job. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's the case?
Yeah, I mean, it's a multiple situation. I mean, you have people that move. We are dealing with it oftentimes, sometimes very low income individuals in society. These jobs aren't necessarily always long-term to begin with. We do and always will have a segment of the population that is not interested in paying, will never pay, will avoid, put a lot of work into avoiding paying. So, I mean, we see a lot. Because this is, those two are collections. How much have we collect? Mm-hmm. So 100%. I think it's multiple fold. There's a lot of issues. Those are the common issues that we see. People will switch jobs frequently. Some people deliberately, some people because it's temp agency employment. And if they jump from temp to temp to temp, a lot of times we'll have participants that are enrolled in multiple temp agencies and they'll go where they have an assignment. So there's a lag time. Individuals are required to report to us when they switch jobs. That doesn't always happen, and there's the companies will report to the new hire in the state of Wisconsin, indicating, you know, that this person now has taxes coming up from this employment. But there's a lag time from the state when they start that job to when we get that information through the new hire. If people reported them to us, and we could maybe get that going a little bit faster, but sometimes by the time we catch it, that assignment has already ended and they.
What is the highest rate then since you guys have been in charge of that?
It was
71 and 70. What's the highest it's been under your?
72 point something with current.
Mm-hmm.
And then arrears was 73?
Yeah, somewhere around there, 72, 73.
And that was when the stimulus money came through?
Yeah. We were permitted to take the first stimulus check. So that first $1,200 payment. One of the provisions in the federal when they wrote it was that it could be taken for child support. We were barred by federal regulation for the rest of them.
So it's been pretty consistent. You just,
yes.
It's been a battle to try to figure it out. All right, thank you.
How does this affect currently or formerly incarcerated parents who owe?
We have a very, sorry.
No, go for
maybe
it.
Maybe this is a different day. Is this really a long
story? In regards to individuals that are incarcerated, we do have a program wherein if they're going to be incarcerated for more than 180 days, we do provide them with a motion to make application to suspend their child support while they're in custody. It follows the state Wisconsin Supreme Court, Dummler, the court has to ask specific questions in order to grant the motion. On occasion, we cannot get individuals by phone from prison for various reasons, lockdowns, movements, what have you. So we created the document so that we actually have all the answers we need should we not be able to get phone. So we have a program for individuals to suspend their current child support. In those cases, we do collect $1 per month towards arrears that may be owed on the case in order to meet that arrears collection.
Just need a dollar to get
it. I need a dollar to get it hit.
Yeah.
So we do $1 per month. Individuals that are currently incarcerated, when we establish new orders, we will set it at low income guidelines. We use the base amount from low income guidelines. There's a chart in the statute. The lowest is for one child is $95 per month. We'll commence that 60 days after release from custody. And then as for individuals that maybe have been recently incarcerated, be recently released, we'll do all sorts of things. We'll generally do a low income guideline. We'll send it out several months and we'll open the jobs program. You know, say, okay, well, we're gonna do $95 a month, but we're not gonna start until January 1st. That gives you a couple months to reintegrate.
My question is, if someone's been incarcerated for a period of time and they've had their collection suspended except for the $1 a month, but it's set at low income like $95 a month, and they've been incarcerated for 12 months, do they then owe the 12 months when they get back?
Yes, ma'am.
And the interest that would have occurred. That's part of your arrears, isn't it?
Yes.
The rate of collection on that, I suspect, is also not great.
No. And studies have been done that indicate that individuals who, the reason why OCSE, the federal promoted suspending for individuals incarcerated, is that individuals are more likely to get employed and stay around and pay if they don't leave prison with a substantial arrears.
Right.
So if you get out and you owe $13,000, you might just want to go and not tell us where you're going.
They still have trouble finding.
Oh, this is just from my understanding, but why are workers not initially compensated for their cases where they're doing like the financial management, like the 4D cases
you have to apply for? They're paid, you know, for their time. But why doesn't the federal government pay them for doing, like, why doesn't the state? That's a good question.
They should. Why? They can't pay them with 4D.
Funding comes from one pocket, but they have the responsibility to do both kinds of cases, but they're really only getting paid from one pocket, right?
Correct. Yep.
And maybe we want to hear some other day about your opinions on why they should get paid for the non-coordinated cases as well.
Sure.
Compensated. They're paid. They're not compensated through federal funds, right?
Right.
Good. Yeah, great question. So out of, we'll just say 30% you have the most struggle collecting, right? Is that, I'm guessing here, typically it's a man probably owning child support probably most of the time. As a percentage.
Percentage-wise, yes. We do set orders for anybody, but percentage-wise,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So in those cases, do you think that person, and I'm just curious, do you think they have children with more than one person? So they owe two mothers child support. I don't know, I'm just asking if that's, I'm just trying to think out why it's so hard for that 30% to get collected. Is there any one type of demographic that is the most hardest to collect from out of that 70%?
No, it's everyone. I mean, we have cases with one mom, one child. We have cases with multiple partners. I think there's a lot of dynamic there. It's not even necessarily poverty too. I mean, you're dealing with people's interpersonal relationships also. And when they break down, people can be extremely venomous to one another.
Sure. And then,
really? I know.
Yeah, and then I guess the follow-up question, how many that are collecting child support fall into that, the first category we talked about, what you call it, economic maintenance, but the first subject we talked about, how much of a crossover is there that they're getting some type of state aid? If you guys track that information or...
You know, they had always told me that most of our cases are people that have applied for services and they're not on aid. Now, they might have been on aid for a short period of time, got referred to us, and then they got older and they're working and they're off the assistance, but they're still our case. So, but that was a while back when I had heard that, when I was told that by the state.
Yeah.
But that's another interesting thing to find out. Okay, are you running out of time, or what time is your...
We don't have any more reading.
Oh, you're not counting board meeting?
No.
Oh, sorry.
I got to go.
Let me do a refresh on that. Let's pretend there's a county board meeting. Yeah. All right, there we go.
I think these presentations have been great so far because they spur a lot of other questions. We don't want to keep you here all night.
No, I'm fine.
We have
I'm fine. I was just kind
of.
I'm
sorry.
Anyone?
I chat.
Can we order pizza?
I think, Supervisor Thomas, that's an interesting question to understand how many recipients of child support also receive maybe other benefits, but certainly child support crosses all demographics. You know, you have families at every demographic. So
I think it also depends too on what they were looking at, on what the court we are as far as what I see as far as aid cases. Most of the initial orders that we're setting are new aid cases that we're getting in referral to the staff's attorney in that order. As we move on in the process later in the years in that the case has been open and we're doing the contempt or collection action, those could be more former aid cases that we're supporting.
And then, can we show the dashboard?
Yeah.
So, we do dashboards in both economic support and child support services so that we can see what output is every month. We have another child support dashboard that is related to performance and caseload size, health insurance rates, things like that. But this is one we're doing now because of the pandemic, we started to reach people in different ways. Before the pandemic, we started a texting program. During the pandemic, we started to use email more. So now I wanted to keep track of how many emails, phone contacts, text outcomes. And it seems like a lot of nitpicking, but it's good to show the amount of work that people are doing. It's also something where we can compare, right now to 12 months later, is the employee struggling? Well, how many emails are they doing? Is it in line with what they've been doing in the past? And then the genetic tests that we completed every month. And we are big on partnerships in the division because we don't want to duplicate services, and we want to use our partners who understand, have the same population. So we're fortunate that the health department conducts our genetic testing. It's really convenient for the customer. And it's really safe and it's clean because they go to the health department. There's other child support programs where they go into someone's office and the director is swabbing them. And at one point we were doing that, and it's just not, the court likes it much better now that we're using the health department. And then the service process, we have a partnership with the sheriff's department, and we have a partnership with O'Brien and Associates that does our process service. And then the number of court hearings that Catherine and Lori are at, and Debbie Zerobe, 332 a month. That's a lot of hearings. Yeah. So I just wanted to give you an idea of the volume. This is an extra large county for the child support program. And then the last information was on the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. So there are 11 workforce boards in the state of Wisconsin, and this is the Southeast Wisconsin Workforce Development Board. And you have Kenosha County, Racine, and Walworth County in that Workforce Development Board. Doug Bartz is the Workforce Development Manager for the Southeast Wisconsin Workforce Development Board. The funding is 100% federal funding in the state of Wisconsin as well with workforce development. And then there's some local competitive grants that we can compete for,
and use to maybe provide some technical training, or recently they did some marketing, which was on the next slide that I'll talk about. But this is a very large overview. There's a lot to this program. But adult dislocated workers and youth programs and working with business services to try to get employees for businesses is the main goals of this program throughout the state of Wisconsin and throughout the nation. And they partner with job centers, and they're mandated to provide certain services to these job centers. And then the next
slide.
So this I thought was neat. This is something new that they're doing to advertise to people in the community. Come to our provider for this region that provides these services through WIOA. And they went to a weathered sidewalk and they did this power wash thing. And they did it in 6 areas in Kenosha and some areas in Racine. I don't think they did it in Walworth. So I thought that was a great idea to do that, good marketing tool. And then the last slide just talks about our commitments. We all work together with our management team, with the employees, about what our primary goals are. I think what I want to pull out of that the most is, well, customer service is very important to all of us. We want to be known as providing premier customer service. We have a short fuse for poor customer service, and we want to hear about it when it happens. And that's just the way I am about it, and all, I think all of us are. But we have a strong expectation with the employees to be resource navigators. We go and visit partner agencies so we can learn about their services, and we have them come and present to us. Because I want any of the employees, when they're on the phone and they're talking to someone, and then they, in their assessment, find out that maybe there's a domestic violence situation, then connect them to Women's and Children's Horizons. Maybe there's food insecurity, they're not eligible for food share. Connect them to the pantries. And then lastly, I also want to bring up with the public health emergency unwinding, could be in January, that people who have been getting their medical assistance and have been getting additional food share benefits, that will all start rolling back. We're going to get a lot of people who don't understand, even though we're doing a lot of marketing about that. The state's doing marketing, we're doing marketing, and we're going to be doing even more, and we have to retrain employees that have been providing services, particularly in economic support, in a certain manner for the pandemic, that they put a little hold on some things. Now we have about 50% of the employees are new and aren't used to those old procedures, so we're going to have to retrain people and provide good customer service and provide accurate benefits. So there's a lot coming on the horizon that we're working hard to prepare for. But I just want you to be aware of it in case you get a phone call. Why? How come I'm not getting this amount of future anymore? So please call me if you need any talking points or anything like that. So that's it. And I thank you for your time and any questions.
I want to thank you for coming in. I think you and your department does a great job. You know how I know that? Because in 15 years of being on this board, you haven't been brought before us with any problem. So I think you guys do a really, really good job, and I appreciate the work you do.
Thank you.
I mean, I'm just wondering, too, with a name like WKRP, do people call Cincinnati? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good save for a
while.
Good work.
I just have like a bigger question. Mm-hmm. Just on my personal thing, I think we're headed into a nasty recession. Now, you two have been here 20 plus years, so you lived through the last one, through this, right? Do we need more people working? Because you can only work so many hours a day, right? You can only take so many phone calls, emails, or texts. So is there a preparation for what's going to happen if inflation continues and people can't afford, like, buy gas, do I pay my electric, do I have food for my kids? You guys are probably dealing with this when gas went over $5 a gallon for a while. Are you guys prepared in some different ways, like how do you prepare for that in 2023?
Well,
because you guys have seen it, and I don't know how long you've been with the county, but you just referenced it collectively. They've been here since they were 12, so.
I mean, I think we deal with it every day. mean, someone is always, there's always people in crisis and financial crisis every day.
Economic support, we're very worried because the most vulnerable populations, the elderly, blind, disabled, have been getting their full allotment of food share of $230 for 3 years, and it's going to go back down to $19. So it's going to be a huge hit. And being kicked off of medical assistance, but another thing, we haven't been able to close anybody, and now as we run those renewals back, we know there's going to be 2,000 to 4,000 people that might not be eligible anymore. So it's really more staff would be phenomenal. I mean, it's hard, and you know, with the raising gas prices, you know, staff kind of joke about it, but I mean, they're like, oh, can we get a transportation stipend? Because we have people coming from Milwaukee, Racine, Lake Geneva that are driving into work for us, and we're so thankful, but it's definitely affecting us now.
Yeah, I didn't see it on that list. It might have been on there. Do you guys also oversee rental assistance?
No.
No.
That's Community Action for Families, okay. And Equus, who administers 72.
I just know rent's gone through the
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it has. But you're partnered with them. You know how to connect with them.
Yes. Yeah. We have a monthly meeting with them, too.
So my question is this, from your many years of experience, we're still in a time where there are significant number of open positions in the company, open jobs. As people come off of the extended benefits, do you project that some of them will go looking for that work then? Are they not working? Are they underemployed? Why do we have so many open positions and still so many people receiving extended benefits? Do you foresee the gap closing because people are going to have their food share rolled back or have their medical assistance rolled back, or is that just the vulnerable population that's probably not going to be taking home jobs?
I think a lot of the people getting food share, they're working more.
Yeah,
they're eligible for food share, they're still working. They're working 2 part-time jobs or 1 full-time job and for a low wage.
There's very few people that are not working. I mean, I would say at least working some hours.
But I speak to employers around the community saying, where are all the workers? And this sort of false sense that when food share rolls back or any other types of extended benefits roll back, that they're going to suddenly get an influx of applications. Do you think that's going to happen or not likely?
I don't think it's likely. I think what I've been hearing from the state workforce development is that it's because of demographics. People have retired, and we don't have enough new people,
right.
The population. So you might see a little flurry of activity at first, maybe, but I don't really think that there's going to be all these people that enter employment that aren't working already getting the benefit.
You also talked about part of the services, you know, that workforce development does is connecting workers to employers, you know. Finding out, we have got these people have jobs here, we need a job, blah, blah, blah. Again, all I hear for the last couple of years is, where are all the workers? What is the answer you would give to the community, to the business community? Where are all, is it population? Is it, we have too many people on the retired end and not enough?
I think people, and I would say pay and housing costs. You know, I have a young adult daughter that is looking for rent and she can't find anything under $1,200 a month. And so you have to have a sustainable wage in order to, you know, get it out.
Have the employers not brought the wages up high enough?
I don't think so.
No. Yeah. We hear that a lot in court. And lately, you know, my rent has doubled.
Yeah.
And I'm making $14 an hour, and I don't have reliable transportation, and then if I'm a stay at work, I get a point, and if you get 3 points, you're done.
Yeah.
And if you work at someplace like Amazon, you can't be late. If you have a child care issue, because they have to cover that day, so you get a full point instead of a partial point. You're also dealing with sometimes the lower educated, and also formerly incarcerated parties. Not every employer wants to hire those people. I have a lot of them that want to work. but can't necessarily, their background will keep them from getting employment.
Just curious what you give the answer to. We all have our theories. I know housing is big.
And making people's food share whole during this pandemic has really helped, because people haven't had to make those hard decisions of feeding their family,
right,
or
one or the other.
It's really helped, and all of a sudden it's going to be tough, really tough to go through.
Supervisor Stacker?
Just wondering if you could, do you know how many participate in this career training and education service? Do you have a number on that?
I think those case management is 25 to 30 a month. Does that sound right?
We can give you that number.
Okay.
Any other questions for Judy?
I got a couple.
Thank you, sorry.
Have you gotten any, are you tracking any response from this?
It just started.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's very interesting to me. I'd like to see what would happen there. What's your outreach budget?
Oh, well, we had the supervisors and the managers and myself doing the outreach because for example.
Okay, so that's like a phone thing, or you're not like paying for advertising?
We go to events.
Okay.
Events that we can go to market services. And I think the biggest population that I want to reach is the elderly, because they don't know they're eligible for food share. They're just on Social Security, and they could be eligible for food share. And if they got $100 a month in food share, then they can pay for the prescriptions.
Yes. Okay.
They don't realize that.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Other questions?
Yes.
Anyone else? Well, thank you so very, very much, all of you, for coming and providing your insight and expertise and the time it took to prepare this.
Thank
you. Apparently you have never been called to the table here, but at least in the 15 years I was not here. So I really do appreciate your bringing this to us. It's very educational for our
group. If anybody has any further questions, please reach out anytime. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Those with my old eyes.
Well, that's what helped you wait.
Yes, I get a list of where they're working. And if they're keeping a job. And they are.
Any other business?
Great job.
Motion to adjourn.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We are adjourned.
Oh, you got the answers.
Hey, John.